It's no surprise that updating the electricity grid today will make for a better tomorrow. Increased self-sufficiency is just one of the benefits. The Great Grid Upgrade will also boost the economy and create new green jobs. And best of all, you can continue doing the things you love, like watching the latest epic nature documentary or listening to this podcast while caring for the planet too. Find out more at nationalgrid.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
The NBA playoffs are here, and we all know playoff mode is a thing. Listen to the evidence. Playoff crowds are going wild. Playoff players are lighting up the court. Even your speakers are in playoff mode. Okay, we'll take it down a notch, but just a notch, because this is the Turn It Up to 11 NBA playoffs. Playoff mode is clearly a thing. The NBA playoffs presented by Google Pixel continue on ABC, ESPN, TNT, and NBA TV.
So I've arrived on, close to the banks of the River Severn, but on a canal. And I'm meeting someone who I've worked with, but never met, worked with for many years on BBC Countryfile magazine. Never met, it's Simon Heptonstall. Simon, hello.
Hello, great to meet you.
Very nice to meet you on a cold, cold morning.
Yeah, there's
January
a chill
morning.
Wind, and it's very, very grey, isn't it?
It really is. It's sort of leaden.
But it suits the site of where we are, really.
Yeah, where are we in the world? Why have you brought me here?
We're on the Gloucester to Sharpness Canal, right alongside the River Severn, about halfway between Bristol and Gloucester. And it's a site of an extraordinary relic. They call it an accidental museum.
Okay, hello.
Where we can see a lot of maritime history and industrial architecture along the banks of the river. If we walk a little bit further, I'll show you.
Just to set the scene, we're beside, it's a very broad canal. Now I'm used to my little Monbrett canal, which you can always jump across.
Well, this was, when they opened this one, this was the widest canal in the world and the deepest canal in the world.
Really? Oh my goodness.
1827, I think.
1827.
It was that sort of
almost
craze.
Almost 200 years ago.
Yeah, craze for building canals. So they built this thing to cut off the Arlingham Loop, it's called, which is a huge double bend in the Severn, which is notoriously difficult for tides and currents and things.
So this is a shortcut for shipping.
So this was a shortcut to Gloucester. And by 1900, there was a million tonnes a year coming up and down here, oil and coal from the Forest of Dean.
A million tonnes, so coming up from...
Coming up and down.
Up and down, right, okay.
I think they took oil to up near Gloucester. There was a big storage unit and coal came down from the Forest of Dean via Gloucester.
It's an amazing waterway. I just have not explored it before. And, I mean, there are canal boats here, but I'm so used to them sort of being snug against the back. It must be 50 yards across or something.
I think it's, it's at least 100 feet across.
Ah, okay, yeah.
I like the ducks
we'll do it
just
in
looking asleep. It's so wide and so peaceful for them.
So Simon, while we're walking down here, tell the listeners what you do and sort of what your
I'm a West Country specialist, if you like. I write books and articles. This is almost as far north as I come, and then I'll go
down to
the Scillies.
Slightly altitude sickness.
It's just stories about the countryside, really, and And so this 16 mile canal has no locks at all.
Just
because it's
down.
Just flat. And that's one of the important points about what we're going to see, is that if there was one breach in this canal, the whole thing goes.
The whole thing drains in one fell swoop.
Because there's no way of shutting it off.
It's kind of interesting. The last time I was here for a podcast was a couple of years ago for the Severn Bore. And it was a very similar feeling. It's big skies, low-lying land. And you drive out from the M5 on quite lonely roads till you come to a village. And it's almost like a full stop.
Yes, it is a full stop. It's a good way to describe it. Yes, it's an end-of-the-world feel, isn't it? Because you come to the end of the line here.
Yeah, it must be an interesting place to live because there's no through traffic. And then you've just got the river.
Well, interestingly, this is a small village called Purton on the east bank. And on the west bank is another small village also called Purton.
Oh, really?
And there used to be something called the Purton Passage between them, which was a ferry which ran for...
Is this where we are now? Is this
hundreds of years, yes, across.
Oh, there is a sort of... Well, this is a slipway, really, I guess. Is this
it could be. This could be where the ferry was. I don't know that, mate.
Yeah, there's some interesting duck life out on the... Because we're looking out onto the River Severn now.
Do you recognise those?
I think there's a widgeon, actually. That's a widgeon flying off there.
This is high tide.
Yeah.
This is a high tide, because normally we'd be looking at a great big sea of mud there.
So we're sort of looking over across to... Well, we're looking over to cliffs on the far side.
And the Forest of Dean is over there, so... It's almost a mile across at this point. But there was a time in the 17th, 18th centuries, evidently, where people forded the river here at low tide.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was a regular, you'd make a crossing here. It seems extraordinary now, doesn't it?
It must be. It looks so muddy and, and you know, suck you down. And
well, there were evidently a series of tragic deaths when people didn't understand the tides and then they stopped fording it.
Oh, I see.
And you'll see up here, and you can see the tower, the relics of where they built the Severn Railway Bridge across here.
There was a railway bridge here.
A fantastic bridge. It's a look it up. It's the most beautiful looking bridge.
I didn't realise there was a railway bridge up here.
This was the first crossing before the
modern the roads,
road bridges and the tunnel. The Severn Tunnel kind of put this bridge out of business a bit.
Because I used to commute to Bristol from Wales every day, and a tunnel is a really depressing thing to...
Oh, it is. Well, I did the opposite. I commuted from Bristol to Cardiff, and I worked for the Cardiff Evening Post, so I'd go through that tunnel, yes. It's a sad thing to have to do every morning.
It is. You sort of, you miss this beautiful view.
Right, the story is...
Okay.
This is Purton Hulks, it's called. Yeah. And one evening, December 23rd, 1909, the chief engineer of the canal was summoned to Purton. There'd been a landslip, a huge landslip, a very high tide, higher than this one even, had washed away 60 metres of the riverbank, exposing, you'll see, it's so close to the canal, it's only about 100 feet.
Oh, it's a stone's throw, literally a stone's throw.
So it had washed away, so it was in danger of breaching the canal, which, as I said, hasn't got any locks, so the whole canal would drain out.
And take all the boats
with it. This was the middle of the night, and Mr. A.J. Cullis had to think, what on earth can I do here?
Oh, my goodness, it's like one of
those. He had, down at Sharpness Docks, they had five redundant barges, old timber barges, unpowered things, and he had the brainwave of, well, let's tow them up there and just dump them on the bank as a sort of makeshift barrier. And it seems daft.
And he
now.
Did that that night.
They did it. Well, they did it over the few days.
Yeah.
And the plan was you drive them full pelt into the bank, make holes in them, and gradually they'll fill up with silt and mud as the tides come and go, and form a barrier. And it worked. Amazingly, it worked. And then since then, they've topped it up with boats. So there are now almost 100 boats along here.
That's incredible.
On top of each other, rammed in, some have rotted away to almost nothing. They don't really even know how many there are.
This is a prow of a boat, is it?
Oh, yes, we'll see. Right, so right along here, we can walk along this path, and you see barges and schooners and just in various states of decay, really. It's a very strange sight, but rather compelling, isn't it?
So we're on this little tiny an isthmus where you're sort of, or a,
yes,
where you're stuck between the river.
Yes,
fast
because
river.
The canal is on this side here, and that's the old harbour master's house up there in the distance. That's where the canal meets the river.
Okay.
So we're on a little strip of land
between river and canal. That's a strange place to be.
They call it, some local people I've seen call it Telford's Wall, because Thomas Telford was employed to oversee the building of the canal, and he built a stone wall all the way.
Sometimes
along
I wonder if there were any projects he wasn't involved
yes,
in.
Yes, exactly.
So just to describe what we saw back there, this boat, it's almost like it surged into the bank.
It's an informal site, let's face it, isn't it? It's not a sort of visitor centre, or you can't even tell where you're supposed to walk. But
I like that. I like that a lot because it feels like we're discovering it. And there was some signage back there, but there's not a lot to tell you.
No, I think that might actually be a boat.
That's a boat there.
Because a lot of them were the concrete barges from World War II that they used for various jobs in World War II, like D-Day and things.
Yeah.
And they hung around British dockyards after the war. People used them for various jobs, but in the end, they didn't know quite what to do with them. So they've brought a lot of those concrete barges
concrete
here.
Concrete barges seems like a sort of oxymoron, but they float.
Yes. They were emergency things they made in the war.
Oh, gosh. So here, we're getting close to one. And just, it is amazing. It just looks
You're missing. That's obviously a very prominent one. Yeah. But all along here, there are bits of boats. This is we're walking on boats that are filled with silt over the more than 100 years.
Don't know what those ducks are. Just wish I brought my... they are widgeon, yeah.
We're only a couple of miles from Slimbridge, so that it's full of bird life as well as boat life.
Boat life, yeah. Boat watchers. So we're walking on boats. I mean, it's hard to tell unless you knew, but...
They've done archaeological surveys and lots of research here, just trying to work out what's here and why, because there's no real record. It's not a formal project.
So this boat is called Britain Ferry. There is a little sign here. Is that right?
I'm not even sure that's this one. We might be standing on Britain Ferry. So when was it? It was beached in 57.
Wow. So we're walking past concrete barge.
This is a concrete barge from World War II. Look at that. I think that they're being increasingly worried about the state of the boats, and they do ask people not to clamber on them, but I would think these concrete ones are pretty indestructible.
It looks like it could still be put to sea. Yeah. I mean, it's covered in lichen, beautiful lichens.
And lovely rusty ironwork.
Yeah, what a thing. I mean, it's proper barge shaped, and so this would have carried what, supplies across to Normandy or
I can remember images of the beachheads at Normandy where these things were off the shore, whether they were supplies or troops or they were just emergency things that have ended up doing an interesting job they were never designed for.
No, shoring up the canal.
Yes, and
this is a remarkable place. It's just spooky. It's sort of, it's just a bit of an eerie place.
Yes.
And you said it was a graveyard for a boat graveyard.
It's like an accidental museum, they call it, because it's a whole period of different maritime vessels, the sort that aren't really celebrated.
Lots of
barges, lots of things called troughs, which were
seven
wooden barges really with a mast.
Just Simon, look at the nails coming out, because we're passing two wooden boats, or is it one or two wooden boats here? Certainly one.
There's bits of boat sticking up out of the grass everywhere.
Clearly a sort of, there's huge nails and huge sort of rivets and bolts and...
It's very popular with photographers. I've been here with an art group as well, drawing and painting, because it's so inspiring to look at, isn't it? This is hardly like a boat, what we're looking at now. It's just like an interesting weathered piece of wood sticking up out of the ground.
A skeleton.
That's it, exactly.
It's a skeleton of these ships. And there's more ahead. So there are name tags here for each one, but...
Yes, and if you go to the Friends of Purton website, they actually have a profile of every boat that they've managed to trace, about 80 or 90.
Yes.
And it's a sort of poignant story, how it worked in Bristol Docks for 50 years and then it was transferred to Gloucester Docks and then it ended up redundant. Nobody wanted it and so they just shoved it up here to keep the bank.
Yeah, well, the bank is pretty solid, so it's worked.
That's the amazing thing, isn't it? That Mr. Cullis's idea on that sort of emergency night where he must have think the canal's doomed.
Yeah, I'm going to be blamed for
yeah,
this.
Yeah, he saved the canal and he started this project, which is still going on.
So do they still beach boats these days?
I'm not sure what the most recent one was. There was an interesting one.
Passing
an
huge
IRA, a boat that was being a schooner, was being used for ferrying guns to the IRA. And they impounded it. And they didn't know what to do with it. And they beached out here.
Oh my goodness. They just passed a huge boat back there. I mean, just the sort of lateral timbers left and a bit of ironwork.
But they've researched it and they've done some digs and they found boats under the other boats.
Really?
So so when you think 100 boats, it's a lot of boats. So we probably can see 20 or 30 bits here.
Yeah.
But underneath them, there's at least another layer.
So we've got a whole load of sort of, this whole bank is just boats.
Boats that have formed a framework allowing the mud to sort of solidify and save the canal, which is just there.
We can yeah.
see just through the hedge there.
It's a lonely place, and
it's a strange sight, isn't it? Because it's normally in the countryside, you decry some sort of dump of old industrial stuff, but actually, it's created something rather wonderful here. Look at this metal.
This is weird. I just thought this was. This is the cabin or something. This is yeah. This must be a cabin of a.
I think it might be like the engine.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see what you mean.
You put the coal in there.
This is Edith.
Built 1901. Beached 1962.
Yeah, 61 years. Built in Chepstow. Doesn't say what she was, but she was 74.6 feet long.
Oh, 17.1. Well, we're only seeing a little bit of her.
Yeah.
These look like funnels, don't
they? Yeah. It's
but you can see how it works.
Yeah.
She's full of mud.
Yes, so she can't...
So every time the tide comes up this far, it washes in mud, it solidifies the whole bank. It was a great idea.
Well, inspired, because he had very
desperate.
Little time to
yeah,
do it.
Yeah, desperate.
Well, there's a boat up here that's been fenced. I wonder if that's particularly special. Do you think this is the Edith as well? I don't know. Who
the
knows?
The nameplates are just rusty.
Yeah. So this
blocks,
is curious. This is almost sort of feels like a medieval boat. It isn't, obviously, but it's got a lovely.
They look very old, don't
yeah.
they? Because of the weathering, the lichen.
And the wood.
The wood is beautiful, the way it's weathered. The tides here are 38 feet.
It's one of the biggest in the world, is it?
It's like a four-storey building, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the third biggest in the world, evidently. They used to think it was one of the biggest, but they found two bays in Arctic Canada.
Oh, really?
Which have a slightly bigger
okay.
range.
I'm disappointed for the River Severn to be usurped like that. Fantastic.
So we're heading towards the end of the Sharpness Canal. And the big stone wall, Telford's Wall, they call it around here. That's
which
the old harbour master's house, the white place on the end there.
Oh, I'm intrigued. So this links to the River Severn and obviously out to the sea. Can you still travel from Gloucester out into the sea through the canal?
Yes, and when I was researching this, it was very interesting that the white building we're looking at, the old harbour master's house, is the headquarters of the Severn, I think it's called the Severn Rescue Association.
Yeah.
Which is... After the RNLI, the biggest independent lifeboat organisation in Britain, has 20 different boats all along the Severn.
Really?
Yes, I'd never heard
oh
of it before
goodness.
Even.
And that's
200 star.
And there's obviously a need to rescue people from.
Yeah. Well, around here, the stories, particularly when they built the bridge. So many people killed when they built the railway bridge here.
Yeah.
Because of the currents, of the eddies, the high tides, and then the way that Arlingham Loop, just beyond those cliffs, the complete circle, which is why they built the canal. which is why the bank was washed away, which is really the root of the whole story, is that this unsettled waters here.
Right, this is a dangerous place to be.
Yes, even when they were at the launch of the railway bridge, when they built this in 1879, a rowing boat came to sort of admire it and got caught in an eddy under the spans and sank, and someone drowned.
Oh my goodness.
And then there was a whole sequence of accidents, and it ended up with the major accident in 1960, where two petrol barges were coming underneath and collided in a difficult current, blew up the bridge. And you'll see here ahead of us, that's the last stone pier. There were 22 of these.
Off the old bridge?
Of the old bridge that went across.
We just need more railway bridges across it. Because even today, it's hard to cross the River Severn. You've either got to go down to the bottom.
Definitely.
Or you've got to go up to sort
of... Definitely, but they thought that they actually demolished it. Two of the piers were damaged by the barge collision, so they demolished it with explosives.
That seems such a waste.
And you can see on the far bank, you can just see the sort of relics of...
Yeah.
There was a station there.
Heartbreaking.
So this whole area is... It's about industrial archaeology, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
The boats and the railways.
Bit of a sense of loss.
The canal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just the sort
because
of...
now there's no industry here at all.
No, very, very quiet. This would have been bustling with people and with whatever, what do you call, bargemen, teamsters?
I don't know,
that they go up and down and be bellowing at each other. And
well, as I said, it was 1 million tons a year went up and down. They had oil tankers. 1937, two Navy submarines went all the way up the canal to Gloucester.
It's incredible. It's so recent, and yet...
And now it's just a few pike fishermen, as we saw.
Yeah, and a few pleasure boats, and very few people actually go out to sea.
An interesting one as well. I love the pictures of this old bridge. It looks like the fourth road bridge, like wrought iron hoops, 22 of them going across the river, but raised up 70 feet.
An amazing feat of engineering to build those out in the river as well.
Yes, it took a long time and a lot of money at the time.
Yeah. Seems so
this way. One here housed a little steam boiler, and on top of it, the span that was on top of it swiveled to open like a swing bridge to allow the big ships that were going up and down the canal.
Oh, really? Okay, so you had to stop the trains for when the big ships wanted to go through. I'm following Simon through head high. More than head high reed bed. The path is getting narrower and narrower and harder to find.
Trust me,
he says, trust me. Oh my goodness, it's the architecture of this railway bridge. Lost, broken, and ruined, and as ruined as a Norman castle, really.
Exactly, yeah.
Here it is, lost in the marshes. Piece of so what's that's the bridge over the canal, basically.
Yeah, that's the start. That was the first span. So that, if you can imagine, double that width. That was the swing bit that swung round on that turret. There was a boiler in there to power it.
Yeah.
And a little like a signal box on top, a wooden. I've seen pictures of it. So some chap sat there, and then when required, he pulled levers and things, and the whole bridge swung round, and great big ships could go up this canal right next to us.
Gosh, I bet he got through a lot of novels up there, a lot of big books, or maybe he had to be vigilant all the time.
Maybe, I don't know how busy he would have been.
Yeah.
But now what's left is sort of ivy-covered, beautifully dressed stone. There's a sort of Lord of the Rings-ish feel to it, isn't it? Like some ancient civilization was lost here in the reeds.
Numenoreans. Built big things, and us little people are left behind to gawp at it.
Yeah,
mud is getting deeper here, maybe we'll go this way. Oh, mud is getting deeper. I've chosen the wrong way. This is a barge. Oh, wow, okay. Just in the middle of...
Right up against the tower.
It's been driven into this turret, which is one of the...
This one's iron, isn't it? I don't see any concrete.
There we go. That's the sound of a Severn barge. Whew, took a bit of climbing to get up there.
But what you can see is the curve of the canal, which is just here, right next to us. It curves around behind the hedge there. And now there's some leisure boats where it used to be a hive of industry. And then the big gates that open out onto the River Severn are beyond the White House there.
And that White House is the harbour master?
It was the harbour master for Sharpness docks, which were quite a big deal at the time.
Sharpness docks are here then, is that right?
Yeah, there are some that are still used, just in behind these trees we can't see. Yeah. It still does have some function. I think some grain is shifted up and down.
Can we walk down the canal?
Yes, I think that's what amazing. We should do now and have a look.
Exciting. Beautiful. I mean, this White House, the Harbour Master's House, on the promontory, on the
jetty. It is quite an interesting environment all around. I've walked around there. There's quite a lot of people with little houseboats there. They've turned it into a little community.
Oh, like a liverboard.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
So it's got a sort of bohemian, as we said earlier, end of the line sort of feel to it, hasn't it?
Yeah. Is there a cafe down there?
I think there is.
Yes, we're climbing up onto the canal here. We'll clamber over a wall.
But, Telford's Wall, they call it.
Telford's Wall.
Yes, there's a lovely story about this bridge. You can see how high it is.
It's immensely
high. And that at the top of those piers is where the bridge was. And that had a superstructure of hoops of wrought iron bolted together. And there were lots of accidents with boats crashing into the 22 piers went across the river. But during the war, they used to transport Spitfires from where they were being made in South Wales across the river to England to be used, presumably, in Battle of Britain. And they used as a sort of mark of bravado. They'd fly under the bridge. And you can see how much clearance there was. It's not that
not
easy.
Not a lot.
And there's some famous stories about people misjudging it because the tide rises and falls so much. It was easy at low tide.
So you just wasted
high
a, brand
tide,
new, a brand new pilot and a brand no, new...
Nobody crashed, but there were some court martials.
Oh, okay.
And even at one point, a Wellington bomber went underneath the bridge between the piers. So we're still on the canal. We've still got Telford Stone Wall between us and the river. And there's still a narrow gap.
Yes.
This is all the precarious end of Sharpness Canal where the tides could wash the bank away at any stage.
So we're making our way to the end of the jetty and the bank is much narrower here.
And it gives us a good view. You can see there in the river there are some hulks.
Oh, yes, yes.
There was...
The tide's really gone down actually since we were by there.
Rapidly, hasn't it? Yeah. I think the hulks of the two barges, they were petrol barges that collided under the railway bridge and blew up in 1960. Their hulks are still visible, I've been told. And you can see how unstable the banks are. They're just sort of washed away. There's there recently.
Really eaten away, isn't it? Yeah. Actually, you'd be quite concerned if you had your... if that eats away right towards the wall.
Exactly. Well, it was on the night of the 23rd of December that 60-metre stretch and hedge and everything had all gone.
Yeah.
When Mr. Cullis was summoned to the village.
Mr. Cullis's difficult Christmas.
Yes. But I just love the image of it. Him rushing down and thinking,
scratching
right,
his
what
head.
Are we going to do?
Yeah. What have I got?
And this, as far as I know, is the rescue centre up here. Okay. Of this organisation I'd never even heard of.
This is a rather special spot.
We're sticking out on the jetty into the Severn, really, right into the tidal flow. It's tidal all the way up to Gloucester, normally, sometimes on the special tide, as far as Tewkesbury. But what's interesting here is the different levels.
It is amazing. Oh, there's this hooting of the train, I think, far away. Yes, I see a train coming among the...
Oh, yes.
Goods train.
It's quite big. Good to see, actually. Yeah. It's good to see that still being used.
Well, there's a train and a passenger train on the other side, so they're sort of... Hopefully, it's a double line. This is an amazing place to be, because we are... I mean, there's seaweed on the shore here, which is also interesting. But we've got... little widgeon down on the water, a couple of little widgeon, and
Interesting how the bank has been exposed. Just in the short time we've walked from there to here,
yeah.
That entire bank has been exposed as the tide has gone out. And now there's birds, waders and...
Well, yeah, lots of waders out there. I wish I had my binoculars because there's a lot of life out
there. Along this stretch, it's also a SSSI for geology as well.
Fossils, at least.
Yes, oh, really? Fossils. Okay. So among the mud, there's some ancient rocks. So we can see some rocks right in front of us here. And evidently it's full of fossils of fish and... Seeds and plants. I'm not sure I'd want to wade out into that mud
not
looking
today.
For fossils.
Not today.
We're looking across to the forest, the hills of the Forest of Dean over there.
Yeah.
Which is where the coal came from, to sort of make all this important. That's why the canal was built, that's why the railway bridge was built. That's why it was important to preserve the canal and have the hulks there, all because of the coal from the Forest of Dean, which now isn't mined at all.
And here we're just at the harbour master's house.
And you can see right down, look.
Oh, to the Severn Bridges, the road bridges further south.
So River Severn is actually to the bridge.
Yeah.
From the bridge to Cardiff is Severn Estuary, and beyond that is Bristol Channel. That's the official thing.
Okay. No, I think I've always got those mixed up. So
yes, I always. I just sort of call it the Severn generally and hope that I'll get away with it.
Well, the Severn pedants are going to be very happy with you. I mean, people don't live here. This is a rescue.
Yeah, you'll see. Centre. You'll see the vehicles here.
Oh, yeah. Water rescue.
It's the biggest independent rescue service in Britain. I've never heard of it. It doesn't receive any funding from the RNLI. It's just its own thing, SARA.
SARA, Lifeboat Search and Rescue.
They've got 20 vehicles, 20 boats, and 200 staff, is what I heard.
So what happens here? So this is a lock gate as well, then?
This is the way from the canal into the river. Although there's no locks as such on the canal because it's all one level on the floodplain. Yeah. To actually enter the river, you need these huge gates that we're standing right next to now.
Oh, this is impressive. Wow. And so what happens? Does they have to
drop?
Well,
it's a tidal drop, isn't it? The tide here is 38 feet, which is the height of a four-storey building. So it would easily get to there, wouldn't it?
So you wait for high tide before you're allowed out.
I think there's a window of a couple of hours where you can use it.
Yeah. So, we're outside the rescue station. We've just been looking at the river. A mile, as you said, a mile of... brown water.
Moving rapidly. Yeah. Quite an imposing sight, actually. Yeah.
And then above us here, you were just pointing out this slowly moving...
It's rather beautiful, isn't it?
Wind turbine, yeah. So we're back at the beginning, Simon. We've walked back along the canal. That was lovely. Very serene, actually, compared to the Wild River. And the tide here now has
gone dramatically down, hasn't it, since we were here at the start. We can still see these hulks poking out from the riverbank.
Shapes in the
See some that look like they're actually out in the river themselves.
What an evocative, weird place this is. Simon, thank you so much. This has been a brilliant... Well, it's opened my eyes up to this part of the Severn Valley here.
It's a very interesting site, isn't it?
What a curious place. Yeah. Absolutely urge you, if you're ever in this part of the world, come and have a look at this. What are we calling it? Purton Graveyard.
Purton Hulks is what they call it, but it's a ship graveyard. Yes, it's like a museum along the riverbank. You just wander freely.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
The NBA playoffs are here, and we all know playoff mode is a thing. Listen to the evidence. Playoff crowds are going wild. Playoff players are lighting up the court. Even your speakers are in playoff mode. Okay, we'll take it down a notch, but just a notch, because this is the turn it up to 11 NBA playoffs. Playoff mode is clearly a thing. This is what you love about playoff basketball. The NBA playoffs presented by Google Pixel continue on ABC, ESPN, TNT, and NBA TV.
And that was truly an extraordinary place to go. This weird boat graveyard along the River Severn, but between the Severn and this incredibly deep and wide canal. And, I mean, if you get a chance to visit there, it's eerie, it's beautiful, full of wildlife and full of incredible views. The views across the river to distant trains and hills and forests, it's magical. But also the story that Simon Heptonstall told was just a fantastic one of how basically one man's ingenuity saved the whole canal system there. And I'm very grateful to Simon for spending a day with me and showing me this wonderful part of the world. So it's the Gloucester Sharpness Canal. And I've returned there since to make another podcast, this time with the emphasis on fishing, with pike fisherman Will Millard. And that's a really, really exciting episode to look out for. I hope you enjoyed this adventure. And if you have, please leave some positive feedback and likes and all the nice things on whichever podcast provider you use. It's a huge help to us, gives us a big boost and gets us out to more listeners. And of course, you can contact me and the podcast team. Our email address is editor@countryfile.com. And the very best emails, particularly if you've recorded some sounds of your own of the British countryside, they'll be played later on the show in one of our Plod Chat episodes. But for now, to say a final thank you to Simon, and thank you all for listening, and join me again next week for another podcast adventure. But for now, it's goodbye.